A committee chairman under fire. Bob Boehning responds with an attack ad. Jerry Torr targeted. The mail campaign that is loaded with irony. An Indiana congressional candidate who lives in Florida. Vote centers in Hancock County. And a review of the NRA convention. That plus a primary election roundtable and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 2, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, a powerful committee chairman in the General Assembly sent the message to voters that he's vulnerable.
This is Michael Scott, a union electrician and a Republican who is running for a seat in the state legislature. On his website, he talks about being a Christian and a politician.
God really calls us a people to be a people that if we see something being done that's wrong, to take a stance.
But in an ad from the campaign of Bob Boehning, Scott is made out to be a bad guy.
Michael Scott's negative campaigns have been funded by some of the same groups that supported Barack Obama, organized labor, and Democrats.
My TV ad is totally factual.
Boehning defends the ad and points to negative mail pieces that have been distributed by outside groups trying to defeat him. Scott sees it differently.
It's out of desperation. And the phone calls I have been receiving are people are just flat mad at Bob.
And that's what Boehning worries about. He's the chairman of the House Education Committee and believes his support for education reform has made him a target.
Across the state, there's a lot of people. Tony Bennett was their number one target, and I'm number two. And so there's a number of groups who would love to take me down.
Can Michael Scott win? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike McDaniel. John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is that ad over the top?
No, I think it's clearly over the top, and it's obviously desperation on Boehning's part. I mean, he is a target. I mean, he's been the chair of a committee, which has, in the 5 years that he's been the chair of the committee, they have not restored education funding to the level it did before Mitch Daniels' cuts. So there's less money, and on top of the fact that there's less money, he spread it around with the vouchers and all of these testing things so that there's really less money going to public education, and at the same time, he attacks both the teachers and the school board. So he's made a lot of enemies justifiably.
I'm interested in the tactic here because he's done some positive ads on cable, but he went on broadcast with this ad without establishing his campaign at all. Could this backfire?
I doubt it, and the reason I say that is because there have been three pretty ugly mailing pieces mailed against him that landed on consecutive days with a lot of mistruths about Bob, and it's a situation where if you don't fight fire with fire, you run the risk, especially this close to Election Day, of having it be a problem. So they had to do it. They had to do it in a hurry, and they've done it. I think it'll be effective because these ads are effective. This guy's trying to pass himself off as something he's not. And they're trying to point that out.
Well, and Boehning's trying to pass him off as something he's not either. Well, the idea that Rahm Emanuel or Barack Obama
saying the same people that supported them are
right.
supporting this guy.
The same
guy.
People that
right.
support
That's
Boehning
the answer.
Also supported
That's what
Democrats.
It is.
Does that make Boehning
no,
a Democrat?
No, but these are the same folks that are supporting him.
It's the same folks.
And people need to know
he has the same folks supporting other people.
That's
the argument.
Fight fire with fire, but when you use this kind of fire, you're telling people that you're in trouble.
I think that's right. especially since you're having, you have a candidate here who has enjoyed a long tenure, 20 plus years. He's been,
22 years.
He was elected in the most recent cycle, what, 62-63% of the
vote?
Well,
he ran against Scott in the last primary and beat him 63-37.
And so that would suggest to me that some of these reforms, which Ann indicates might be a problem for him, many of them were in place.
Some of the changes.
Two years ago.
Reforms. Yeah, they are changes.
I think it's probably, as Mike suggests, you have these direct mail pieces, and it's conventional wisdom that if you really want to get nasty, you can do it through direct mail because it's easier. It's more palatable, perhaps, for the voters. And given the compressed response time here, it makes sense that television is probably about the only way to do it, because by the time you design a flyer and get it out, they may be showing up after people already go to the polls.
And Scott can't afford TV. He's got a web video up today with an 8-year-old making his case, obviously trying to present a softer, gentler Mike Scott.
Well, I think the problem for Mike Scott is that he's having to be very targeted with his shots at Boehning, and Boehning has the ability to go broadcast. And I saw these ads on television, and I didn't even know who they were for until I saw it the second time, and I noticed the tagline at the bottom of the ad
at the very beginning.
Yeah. But he definitely is bringing a nuclear bomb to this fight, and he has detonated it on this fight. And I think John's right. It probably benefits Boehning because he's got the money and the reach that Scott doesn't have. But you can't underestimate the effect of those targeted ads either. And what I'm fascinated by is this all-out battle that you've got going on between these two in a race that really you wouldn't figure was competitive when you looked at it on paper in February.
May make it a lot more interesting in November.
Bob's been a champion for education in the state for a long time, and the unions are going to do everything they can to spend money to try to beat him, and that's what's going on here.
Well, it's not about education.
Yes,
it's about outsourcing everything, and it's about attacking the teachers.
Yes, it is.
We don't even know whether his so-called reforms
work.
One thing that it is clearly the fault line between those who are for what has gone on and who are against what has gone on. So that's what we're seeing.
One version of what goes on since it changes every 3 months.
That's exactly right.
All right, to another race. Jerry Torr, a Republican state representative from Carmel, is now a union target in next week's May primary election. A political action committee funded by the construction trades has sent out negative mailers that accuse Torr of wasteful spending on mass transit. It's unusual because Torr and the unions are allies on that issue. Union leader Pete Remsen said, quote, "We are 100% in favor of mass transit. We are also 100% against Jerry Torr. We're looking at the big picture," unquote. Torr says it's personal.
Clearly, it's just retribution against me personally because I championed right to work in Indiana.
Does this give you any second thoughts about what you did on the right to work bill?
On the right to work bill? No, absolutely not.
Mike McDaniel, when's the last time you saw a campaign tactic that was that cynical?
This one takes the cake because they say they're for mass transit and they're trying to paint Jerry as being a big spender because he's for mass transit. What they did was they polled and realized that right to work won't poll well in that district. But the idea that we may have mass transit to pay for is something that bothers some people. So they use that, even though they say they're for mass transit, which is
crazy.
This may be the dumbest money spent by anybody in this primary, trying to beat him with this approach because it won't work. This guy's been a champion for every tax cut, everything that's fiscally responsible for Indiana, and to try to make him out to be some kind of big spender in Carmel is just nutty.
Well, the right-to-work fight took place before the last election. His only opponent in the last election was Socialist, so obviously the unions didn't think that counted. he's got an opponent in the primary who doesn't appear to be a serious opposition. Why are they spending this money?
Well, I think it's because they're upset, as a lot of people in Indiana are, because, as you know, when Mitch Daniels ran for election for the first time, he said the only measure of success for the governor is growth in personal income. And under the Republican watch, personal income's gone down and continues to go down, and people are upset about that. But your original question is, have you ever seen such a cynical ad? Yeah, Boehning's. He makes it up out of whole cloth, and then he says his attacks are factual. It's ridiculous.
The unions, first of all, they're mostly a Democratic group playing in a Republican primary here, where it doesn't look like they can have an effect.
Well, I think that they feel like that they've got to get their shots in where they can. There aren't many places for them to be involved right now at this point in the cycle. So, you know, I think they're letting people know that they're there and that they're getting ready to go forward. They have to show, or they aren't going to be able to go any further. They have to let people know they're there.
Right to work isn't going to change anytime soon.
I don't imagine it will. And in fact, as has been pointed out here, Jerry Tor is proud of that. That's a centerpiece of his campaign. It's not as if he would. It's probably a good thing that it was not the subject of the target of the direct mail pieces, because he'd probably say, "Wow, you know, I'm all for it. Thanks for doing my bidding for me." It's. I think he's probably in a good position. Yes, there is frustration on the part of some of the union groups because of his authorship of the right to work bill. But and you're right, John. There's a. I can see the value, perceived value, in firing a shot across the bow. But if you fire the shot, and it doesn't work, yeah. And then
it causes them to spend money.
Well, but it I think for voters who are aware of what's going on, and as Mike said, this takes a cake for cynicism.
Aren't any voters aware of that.
There may be a few people watching now who are. But if you take the shot and you miss, then does that just embolden him or make them appease?
How do you get him more emboldened? He's already made war on working people around the state. How do you get more bold? Every initiative that AFAC comes up with,
jobs
the initiative.
Is a negative. I love that.
Oh, bringing low-paying jobs to Indiana
jobs
is hardly
to Indiana
a positive. And
is what it's all about.
Oh, yeah, at 8, 9, 10 bucks an hour. Whoopee. Yeah.
Let me take a job when you can take it.
Let me just say that I enjoy that.
Your measure of success.
I enjoy when we get close to elections and passions rise. All right. There's a candidate for Congress in the 7th District who doesn't live in Indiana.
My name is Aaron Kent McGee.
This is Aaron McGee in a YouTube video, one of several that point out his political views, including one where he talks about running for Congress. I reached him by phone in Florida.
Have you ever visited Indiana?
No, I can't honestly say that I have.
He's running here because ballot status in Indiana is easier to obtain than in other states. But he's also trying to get on the Florida ballot in a bid for Congress there, and he's running for the Senate in Tennessee. It's also unlikely that McGee could unseat Democrat Andre Carson if he did win the primary. But over the phone, he said he has an issue with Carson.
I think many Americans would object to electing a Muslim to a federal office. It poses a grave security risk for them to hold federal office.
John Katzenberger, I think we can probably agree that he's not a serious candidate, but should he be allowed on the ballot?
No. I think you ought to be, you know, I know that what it says in the federal law about not having to live in the district, but you ought to at least live in the state to have some sense about what's going on.
Well, what the law says is he has to live in the state when he's elected, so on election day.
Okay, we'll welcome him in.
He's not even ever been in.
And oh, by the way, you know, I think his enlightened points of view are also defeating his, you know, in this case. You know, when he makes those kinds of statements about the incumbent and about Muslims in general, then he's clearly unenlightened and unelectable and shouldn't be on the ballot.
I mean, but you look at the flip side. He's not a serious candidate, and you're right. His views are repugnant. To I'm sure most Hoosiers, and I doubt he'll be so much as a blip on the electoral radar. But it is heartening, I guess, that Indiana has, and this is an odd thing to say, such a low threshold for ballot
access. It's a low threshold.
Because if you look at his home state of Florida, I think
he may not get on the ballot there because they have a filing fee of $10,000.
Or, I think it's an either 10,400 or a certain number of signatures in the thousands. He's not going to, I don't think he's equipped to do that, and he may not have the, but you also don't want to have a situation where people buy their way onto the ballot. So you take the good, you take the bad, you get the perennial sorts of, I guess I'd be insulting Harold Stassen to say the perennial candidates, but it adds to the fun, I guess, of the election season.
But just being there, he's going to take votes away from somebody who may be a more serious candidate.
That's always part of the equation, but, look, we decided as a state a long time ago that we don't want to have, you know, money as a barrier for people to get on the ballot for any office, and shouldn't be. We don't have a situation like you have for statewide office where you got to get petition signatures because the Supreme Court says you can't add eligibility requirements to running for Congress because of the Constitution. So You know, it is what it is, and this guy is clearly crazy, and what he said was repulsive about why he wanted to run in this particular district. But, you know, we all have our – both parties have their share of these kind of folks, and unfortunately this guy's running here, but he won't show up on Election Day.
It's all part of democracy.
Yeah, it is. And it's particularly part of Republican Tea Party politics.
That's so wrong.
Time now.
Bobby Hidalgo Kern. Yeah, you want to talk about him?
I haven't ever heard Bobby.
He had a yard sign in your yard.
You can talk about him as being the perennial candidate. I've never heard him say anything like that about Muslims.
But he's on the ballot again this year. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should congressional candidates be required to live in the district where they run? Your choices are A, yes, it's common sense, or B, no, the voters can figure it out. Last week's question was, are the new Indiana education standards better than Common Core? 18% said yes, 38% said no, 44% said I can't tell. That might be a scientific poll. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. It will be a little easier to vote in Greenfield and the surrounding area this week because Hancock County now has vote centers. There are five of them, including this one in McCordsville. It means early voters can cast a ballot close to home or work without making a trip to the courthouse in Greenfield. On Election Day, voters can choose to go to a vote center or their home precinct, whichever is more convenient. Secretary of State Connie Lawson conducted informational meetings last year, and now 16 counties employ vote centers, up from 7 counties in 2012. Here's her spokesperson, Valerie Krager.
Secretary Lawson has always wanted it to be an option for counties. She's just always wanted to provide them the information to decide if it's the right option for them.
It is electronic. It is new. So there have been a few hiccups here and there, but nothing that we haven't been able to overcome.
That's Hancock County Clerk Marsha Moore. John Schwanis, will we ever see vote centers in a majority of Indiana counties?
You know, I perhaps not, because that's a high threshold, just when you look at half of 92. And it's costly for some counties that maybe don't have the population or the tax base to do that. However, those are the practical implications or barriers. The trend, clearly, in Indiana and elsewhere, is to have more access to the polls, whether that's through mail balloting.
Democrats would disagree with you on that.
Well, the court, the litigants might disagree with you, and there certainly are cases you could cite on both sides. But I think generally, if you look at the election, how they were run 20 years ago, everywhere in the country versus now, you'd have to argue that or agree and stipulate that there are more opportunities now for voters. So that's the trend, but there are the economic realities of having centers in 92 counties, I would think.
This started with pilot programs in 2007. We're up to 16. Right. It seems to be growing.
Well, it is growing, and I'll take a little bit, disagree a little bit with John on the issue of affordability, because there are upfront costs involved with making the turn to vote centers. But we did a study a few years ago for the Secretary of State's office that found that after that occurred, every county would realize a financial savings from the actual implementation of vote centers. So it's really an economic question of whether you can get over that initial bump, and then after that you're in better shape. And at some point in the near future, everybody's going to have to buy new machinery, new equipment, and so it's a matter of when you pay for that, I think. I think that this is clearly the way to go. It's much more convenient. You can adjust the vote centers to where your population is, and people can vote when it's convenient for them, as opposed to on a date certain at a certain place. So I think John's right. I think the trend is more toward openness, and I think this will really facilitate that.
That's what they've done in Hancock County. They've tried to get them for people who live there and work in Indianapolis. They put them on the border, and they save a 15-mile drive to Greenfield.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea. Any barriers to voting that we can knock down are positive barriers, and I think that the Democrats in Hancock County, which is a very Republican county, this is going to hopefully increase the vote turnout, and the Democrats in that county ought to be applauded for voting for it, unlike the Republicans in Marion County who voted against it. And I think we need it across the board. I would be surprised if there wasn't a lawsuit about that in Marion County before too long, because you cannot have two separate systems where you encourage voting in Republican areas and discourage it in Democratic areas.
It is political, right? in Marion County.
Anything has to do with elections is political. Yeah. I mean, come on, let's start with that. But let's give Secretary of State Connie Lawson a lot of credit for going out and around the state trying to encourage people to do this at seminars on how to go about doing it, what they need to do. I think it'll be a growing trend in the state, and I wouldn't be surprised if down the road that you're going to see it in a lot of places, if not a majority of counties eventually, because of the potential savings that are involved. And the biggest problem that counties have, quite frankly, is getting people to man the polls on Election Day. And this can help that if it's done properly. But in Hancock County's case, it's because Republicans and Democrats did work together. They right. trusted each other. They've worked on this system for 2.5 years right. to get it to where it is now. And I think and other counties are doing it. St. Joe's doing it. They're going to bring it online in 2015. There are going to be some other places around the state. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's a growing trend, but you got to have that trust.
The National Rifle Association's huge convention ended in Indianapolis this week. And it may come back again. NRA officials found Indiana to be gun and gun owner friendly. At least 50,000 people were expected to attend events at the Indiana Convention Center. They heard from politicians, including Mitch McConnell, Marco Rubio, Sarah Palin, Mike Pence, and Dan Coats. Spokesperson Catherine Mortensen.
I think if you were to ask our members, they would want to come back here for sure. Our board will be making that decision in the next few years, but I can tell you that the members we've spoken to have been very pleased with what they've seen here.
And Delaney, was the NRA convention a success?
Well, it brought a lot of people to Indiana, so from that point of view, it's a success. And, of course, they were shilling for the Republican Tea Party establishment the whole time they were here. So.
Why don't Democratic candidates come to the NRA convention?
I don't think they're invited to the NRA thing, number one. And number two, when you listen to their executive director's comments, where he's talking about electing a Republican Senate and Benghazi and Obamacare and all the other hate-mongering things that they do, what that has to do with the Second Amendment is beyond me. So they are just shilling for the Republican Tea Party people. And judging from the people who spoke at that group, I think that's pretty obvious.
There were some gun control advocates who gathered here for sure. for a couple of events in the shadow of the NRA convention. And the case they made was that most of the NRA members, they believe, are reasonable, but that the leadership is made up of extremists.
About 5 million NRA members across the country, Republicans and Democrats alike. We have legislators here who are Democrat legislators who are members who even put it in their bios that right. that's something that they're proud of. So it's made up of people from both political parties. But, you know, this brought $55 million worth of economic benefit to Indianapolis and central Indiana. I hope they do come back. They're more than welcome here because they were very well-behaved and spent a lot of money. And it's, you know, how can you pass up an opportunity for $55 million impact?
A whole bunch of big-name politicians, but nobody really made political news.
No, but there were some other stories that seemed to gobble up a lot of headlines this week that it would have been a high bar to cross. But it's, you know, it went off without a hitch. The economic dollars, it's hard to spit at that. And you're right, there was also the pro-gun control, if that's the term, it's true that the NRA, there's no doubt that it has, its opinions have hardened, you might say, in the past several decades. Now, whether it's a reflection of their broader membership or not, I don't know. But their overall thrust of their platform has hardened.
Mike Pence, to welcome them, had a fundraiser the other day, called it the Second Annual Governor's Shoot. They shot clay pigeons and raised money and had a really nice photo opportunity.
You know, between that and riding a motorcycle, it's kind of a macho image he's fostering there, isn't it?
He probably has to work on it just a little bit more.
He's still no Vladimir Putin, though. Well, he's got to get the horse.
Oh, my. All right, finally, the May primary is Tuesday, as we said. Time for predictions, a quick roundtable. What will be the biggest story on Election Day, Ann?
Low T.
Low turnout.
Mm-hmm.
low turnout, maybe.
The biggest story on Election Day will be that the Pacers beat the Washington Wizards the night before in the first game of the second round of the playoffs.
Because this show airs after Saturday night someplace, I hope the Pacers win on Saturday.
For all the talk about voter upheaval and dissatisfaction, I think the big news will be that most every incumbent wins re-election, or at least has the opportunity to vie for re-election come November.
Yeah, if any incumbent is defeated, that
That will be the big story if any incumbent gets defeated. I don't necessarily see that happening, and I expect some prominent columnist or some prominent pundit across the state to say, why are we even bothering with primaries if this is what we're going to have?
Yeah. My guess is the big headline on Wednesday morning will be unrelated to the election.
Pacers win
something, crime maybe. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.